97.5, The Fanatic.
What a pleasant Sunday afternoon to you and yours. Hope you're staying safe, happy, and healthy. Welcome in to 97.5, The Fanatic. 610-632-0975 will be the number to join the conversation all afternoon long. Just wrapping up another really good show by D. Lineham from 9 to noon today. D will be back on tomorrow morning as well from 9 to noon, and we'll follow D once again. So really good, some Phillies talk, college football talk, Sixers talk. We're going to get into all of it and more. We do luckily have a four-hour run today, so we've got a lot to get into. So why don't we just jump right into things? I've said this before. This is not a new concept. This is not something that is just popped up into my head on my drive in or while I was scrolling through Twitter this morning eating my morning breakfast. This is not anything that is a new concept by any means, but it needs reiterating, and therefore it bears our attention this afternoon at 12:01 on a Sunday. I hope you're enjoying your Labor Day weekend as well. Really quickly before we get started, special programming note, Tom Alvord and I, who are on today, I will be back tomorrow. Tom, you and I will not be together, but we'll chat in a little bit, and you will hear Tom in just a little bit. But I've said this before, and it's not anything that is groundbreaking by any means, but it needs to be reiterated because it is frustrating me to beyond belief. And it is also, and more importantly, because no one cares about my frustrations, more importantly, it's going to cost the Phillies a playoff spot. And I'm talking directly to you. I hope you're listening in Miami. Joe Girardi, manager of the Phillies. I'm talking specifically and directly to you. Figure it out. What do I mean by figure it out? Well, I mean, obviously, last night was another example of Joe Girardi making a poor decision and it ended up costing the Phillies in the end. What I mean by figure it out, Joe Girardi, if you want to be an analytics manager and live on the computer and live by the computer and die by the computer, that's fine. Do it. Wholeheartedly invest in it. Become Kevin Cash. I don't care, but make a decision. You want to be a guy who fires from the hip? You want to be a guy who just lives and breathes with his heart's decision? Fine. Do it. Become Ozzie Guillen. I don't care. Those are two really extreme examples of the farthest ends of this spectrum of this conversation. Ozzie Guillen hated computers and hated the analytics. Kevin Cash relies on it, and I'm not sure if he can breathe and chew gum at the same time without them because he loves the analytics. Joe Girardi needs to make a decision on what kind of manager he is going to be. Because this back and forth, halfway between analytics and halfway between firing at you know, however you feel, just whichever way the wind is blowing that particular day, is not working for you. Do you know why it's not working for you, Joe Girardi? Because every time you try to make a decision that you feel contradicts one or the other, contradicts the analytics, or contradicts the feel type of managerial style that you've implemented from time to time, you've made the wrong decision. We talked about this. And in fact, this pairing, myself, Tom Alvord, we talked about this before. Joe Girardi had improved, I think, drastically from the All-Star break through the second half of the season. There's been some ups and downs, but the ups have outweighed the downs. He's made better managerial decisions with the bullpen. He has made seemingly the right call when it comes to, you know, who's going to play third on this game, or does Brad Miller play? Does Ronald Torres play? Is it going to be Alec Bohm? Seemingly what it was to me was that Joe Girardi was figuring out a managerial style that worked for him. And then he reverts right back to old Joe. Right back to old Joe Girardi, who is making decisions on a whim on whether he's going to make decisions on a whim or with the analytics. Last night, Ranger Suarez threw, 72 pitches? Threw 5 innings. And he was then pulled. Gave up 2 hits over 5 innings, 72 pitches. And Joe Girardi said that he didn't like his 4th inning warm-up before the 4th inning. Pitched the 4th, wasn't thrilled with his 5th inning warm-up. He pitched the 5th, and then he was pulled for arm fatigue. if you're going to make that decision with arm fatigue and talking about using your guys in specific manners at specific times, that is okay. But be consistent with those decisions. Because last night would have been an opportunity for you, Mr. I'm going to run Aaron Nola into the ground, and I'm going to run Zach Wheeler into the ground, and have them pitch into the ninth inning, and have them lose a game against the San Diego Padres, and lose a game against, hey, by the way, a guy we mentioned, Kevin Cash in the Tampa Bay Rays, have him, you lose both of those games after quality, really successful starts from both Nola and Wheeler. And then last night you tell me that after 72 pitches, Ranger Suarez, who is fully stretched out at this point, there's no decisions to be made on how many pitches he should be throwing. Ranger Suarez is a starter now and has been for a couple of starts. You decide to pull him after 72 pitches because you thought he had arm fatigue. Joe, your bullpen's been better. Hector Neris, outside of the closer role, has been one of your most complete bullpen arms this season. He's been one of your most consistent bullpen arms this season. Moving him out of the closer role, even though I thought wasn't the right decision at the time because I didn't trust anybody else, has proven to be the right decision. And I was wrong. And Joe Girardi, you were right. He's been good. Archie Bradley had been good for a long stretch of the season this year, has been more up and down recently. And Ian Kennedy, I got to be honest, Ian Kennedy, from every time I've watched him pitch, has been a edge-of-your-seat, roller-coaster-type ride coming out of the bullpen since he's been acquired by from the Texas Rangers. You've done a better job at assembling your bullpen as of late. But last night, you might not find yourself in that Archie Bradley spot where the Phillies inevitably lost the game if you allowed Ranger Suarez to pitch into the sixth. Because if you allow Ranger Suarez to pitch the sixth inning, you may have everybody moves up one. Hector Neris then moves up an inning. You may not need Bradley because you might be in the ninth. And then you could go to Kennedy. Whomever you trust more, you go to. All of these decisions that you're making, Joe Girardi, I need you to just be consistent and tell me you're going to be an analytics app manager or you're going to be a field manager and just be that. I have been a proponent for a very long time that analytics have a place and a time in professional baseball, and I'm probably the furthest on the analytics side maybe at this entire station. I don't know if it has to do with my relative youth. I don't know if it has to do with just how I view managerial decisions, because at the end of the day, the thing that matters the most is victories. And if that happens by computer generation, that happens by computer generation. But at the end of the day, Joe Girardi, and again, I'm talking right to you, so I hope you're listening down there in Miami while you guys get set to play today. You are costing this team games. And if this team misses the playoffs, you listening, Joe? If the team misses the playoffs here today, you deserve to be fired. And it's not last night. This is not a conversation that I've come to over a 24-hour period because of one poor decision. This is a culmination of many, many things happening at once and over the course of a season plus that have led me to believe that Joe Girardi has this team about as far as Joe Girardi can take this team. They still might make the playoffs. And if they make the playoffs, that saves Joe Girardi's job. I firmly believe that. But at this point, with how many games that Joe Girardi's managerial decisions have cost this team, and it's probably upwards, I'm probably getting to the point where it's on two hands now, right? You have that old saying, I can count it on one hand. I think we're getting to two hands now. How many games he has cost this Phillies team? If he has cost this Phillies team two-hand games, meaning six or more, and they miss the playoffs, it's not entirely on him, because we've talked about it before, Tom. This offense has gone inept at times, and the bullpen hasn't been solid all the time, and starting pitching has been inconsistent, especially with a guy you were going to lean on in Aaron Nola. But at the end of the day, if there's going to be somebody who pays for their transgressions with their job, it is going to be Joe Girardi if they don't make the playoffs. So that's where we begin today. 610-632-0975, the number to join the conversation. I need to ask you. I hope you're enjoying your Labor Day weekend. I know it's a little bit cloudy and overcast right now. I hope the weather clears up for you. So if you're having a barbecue, a tailgate, hanging out, watching the games, you have yourself a really nice Sunday afternoon. Maybe you're doing a little bit of day drinking because you're off tomorrow. Have one for me. I hope you're having fun. So I'm asking you today, am I over the line by being this infuriated with Joe Girardi, not just for last night, but last night being a continued mess of a managerial season and a managerial tenure which began with such high expectations for this team? Remember, Joe Girardi was brought in because Gabe Kapler did a terrible job here. And Gabe Kapler still, despite the fact that his team has one of the best records in baseball, and he's probably going to win Manager of the Year with the San Francisco Giants, and that's all well and good, should have been fired from Philadelphia. Was not the right fit, was not the right setting, was not the right coach for the right team. But when Joe Girardi was hired, and Bryce Harper was signed heading into his second year with the Phillies, and things were starting to trend to what was the end of a rebuild and what was the beginning of a process that was going to be playoff time, Joe Girardi had high expectations as a manager because he had pedigree and he had a team that was ready, or we believed, we perceived to be ready to compete. And now I'm sitting here with a baseball team that's 69-66, is out of a wild card spot, is out of the divisional, not out of the divisional race, but out of the divisional lead, because it's still Atlanta, who, by the way, is 3-7 in their last 10. You've had an opportunity to gain even more ground, and you've not been able to do it. And we'll get to that team in just a second. Am I over the line by, at this point, being fed up with Joe Girardi as the Phillies manager? So that's where we begin today. 610-632-0975, and that's where we welcome our second member of the program today, who will be with us from 12 to 4, producing, co-hosting, taking your calls, doing a lot of the podcasting, doing all of the hard work today while I sit here and just blabber on into this microphone, Tom Alvord. Tom, good afternoon.
Hello, Tyler. How are you?
I am good from a personal sense. I'm doing well personally.
I'm glad to hear that.
From a Phillies fandom standpoint, I am this close to being irate again. I have been
You're almost going to get fired again? Is that going to happen?
No, I'm not going to do that.
It's not that
I'm not going to curse on the air.
Okay, cool.
But I have been very patient with this team and very excited about this team over the last couple of weeks because they've started to string some stuff together. And yes, I understand they're coming off the heels of a six-game winning streak that helped them immensely get back in both races, the wild card and the division. But I am to the point that I am not angry right now at this team. I mean, I am. You shouldn't lose two in a row to the Marlins. But I am angry at the entirety of the season, the entire bulk of the work by Joe Girardi. Am I over the line for feeling this way at this point? Because am I going crazy, or is this a justifiable anger?
No, I think that's fair. I don't think you're going crazy. I think you're still sane up there. But it's frustrating. I mean, you said it. We just want some consistency. We see him running, you know, Wheeler and Nola into the ground, and those are your top guys. You should a little bit, but you go from that. Ranger Suarez gave you 95 pitches last game, and I know he's bounced back and forth in the rotation of the bullpen. That's fine. And obviously, player safety should be a manager's number one concern.
Of course it should be. We're not advocating. Like, this isn't 1970s baseball.
Where they're throwing 200 pitches.
Right, and they've got four guys in a starting rotation, and it's like, just go out there until your arm falls off. Yes. We're not advocating for that.
Times are different. That's never coming back, so don't ask.
Correct.
Not happening.
There's no role reversal there. But at the same time, 72 is a very manageable number.
71 it was also.
71, excuse me.
Yes. 71 pitches, and the velocity was still there, relative through 94 in the fifth inning, I believe, and he's not really a velocity-driven pitcher. It's more about location and deception. But I just, and then you go and you bring Neris in, and Neris gives you a clean inning in the six, 11 pitches. If you know your bullpen's kind of struggling right now with Kennedy and Archie, why is Neris only giving you 11 pitches there? Like, what? It just seems like we're back to the point where every string he's pulling isn't working.
Is the wrong one.
Yes. And he was doing a lot better in the middle of the season as of recent. You know, he's been better, Joe Girardi, but it seems like we're kind of falling down that same path of every string he pulls isn't working out for him.
No, it makes a whole lot of sense. And that's really where my anger starts today. I understand, and I've understood all season long, that you can only work with what you're given. And when you can only work with what you're given, you only have so many opportunities to, as you said, pull those strings. And Hector Neris was poor in the closer role. And he made the right decision by removing Hector Neris from the closer role. And Hector Neris has thrived as a setup man, has thrived as a seventh inning guy, has thrived in basically every role he's pitched outside of the closer role. He made the right decision. And I understand that when your bullpen is full of, let's do a little rundown really quickly because we have the time. Start with Archie Bradley. Has been great at times, has been poor at times. Inconsistent is probably a word to use.
So I have a few stats real quick on Archie Bradley. Archie allowed more than one run in a game one time in his first 40 appearances this season. That's really good. More than one run allowed only once in the first 40 appearances. He's done it three times in his last five appearances, nine runs allowed in eight innings. He's struggling. It could be fatigue. You know, he only pitched, I think, under 20 innings. Everyone was a shortened year. He's struggling right now. He doesn't have his best stuff. That's obvious.
Sure. Ian Kennedy, since being acquired,
really
has not been very good.
No.
I mean, the home runs are a problem, and it's seemingly he's given up at least a run every time he's pitched. Now, that number's not factually correct, but it feels that way. But you go back even further. Jose Alvarado, wildly inconsistent because of his control problems. When he's on, he's unhittable. When he's not, you just basically, you stand there, right? As a hitter, you're just going to go, put the bat on the shoulder, throw me a strike. If you hit me, you hit me. And if you walk me, that's great. Throw me a strike. In fact, throw me two.
The fact that people swing at it, especially when he gets in a hole,
a bat wouldn't come off my shoulders until he threw me a strike. Until he threw me a strike, the bat would not come off my shoulders. All right, so Jose Alvarado, right? You got inconsistency there. Connor Brogdon. I like Connor Brogdon's stuff. I have had an issue with Connor Brogdon's location recently. I think that he is missing in the zone a lot.
And you can't do that.
When you miss in the zone, you're going to get hit.
Yeah,
his stuff is good. I think he's going to be a good piece for this bullpen moving forward. He's young. This is probably his first full campaign with the Phillies at the major league level. I think his stuff is good, but it's going to have to be refined. Eniel De Los Santos should, in my opinion, never put on a Phillies uniform again. He's given up runs in something like 48% of his career appearances. I mean, that's, as a starter, that's hard to do. As a reliever, that's unacceptable. So, and that's just a couple guys. We'll dive a little bit deeper into the bullpen as the show goes on. He can only work so much with the hand that he's given. But the decisions that he makes have consistently been the wrong one, which is why I've gotten to the point that it's not entirely his fault. It's kind of like the Eagles, right? We divvied out slices of the pie a season ago, and Peterson got some, and Wentz got some, and Howie got some, and Schwartz got some, and the injury concerns got some, and all of that, right? He is not the sole provider of the losses. But every time I need him to come through, he's not come through. And when you have a manager who's not coming through, that really handcuffs your baseball team even further than the roster itself has already done.
Yeah, and, you know, we were pointing it out now. He doesn't exactly have the best bullpen in the league right now. So if you know that, your bullpen's kind of shorthanded, Archie Bradley struggling, Ian Kennedy's not giving you much. That's fine if you're going to pull Ranger for arm fatigue, I guess. But don't you want to at least see if he can get in, see if he can get a quick inning, maybe see if a guy gets on base in the sixth?
There needs to be, much like with, it was Nola, right? We talked about this the other night. Much like with Nola with the San Diego game, I would have started Nola in the ninth. I would have started Suarez in the sixth. The moment Fernando Tatis got on against Nola, he was done. The moment a base runner got on against Suarez, you have a justifiable pull there.
Yeah, it's a quick leash. That's fine.
And we're going to get more into that decision specifically because there's decisions to be made when it comes to fresh inning versus coming into some trouble. I get it. I understand the differences, and I understand the thought process that goes into it as a manager and as a reliever. So we'll get more into that on the other side. Also today, at some point, we're going to get into some NFL conversation and Eagles-specific conversation. Now, I don't want to rush this, so all I'm going to tell you is, throughout the rest of the day, we are going to have conversations about the league as a whole. And because we are a week away from the Eagles season starting, we're 4 days away from the NFL beginning, it's time for you to go on record, it's time for Tom to go on record, and it's time for me to go on record. And we are going to, no pun intended, give our record predictions. We are going to talk about the Eagles and their predictions and the highs, the lows, the ceilings, the players that could be standout guys, the guys that you might feel are going to be disappointments. We'll go coaching staff, we'll go team, we'll go roster, we'll go front office. We'll talk about it all. And then we're going to go a little bit more holistic, and we're going to talk about the NFL as a whole as we do get set to have NFL play in just 4 days. At some point throughout the show, I want to know, and yes, it's September. Yes, we're not going to like hold you to this. We're not going to old takes expose you if you give us an answer that doesn't end up working out. You might do it to me, and that's fine, but we're not going to do it to you. I want Super Bowl teams. I want MVP. And I want teams that you think are going to surprise you and teams that you think are going to be disappointments. So we'll get to all of that in just a little bit. 610-632-0975, the number to join the conversation. Just getting started here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Trey in Deptford, I want to give you all your time, so we will start with you. Appreciate you hanging through the break. And then it can be you. Phillies at 1 o'clock today. Let's get in on this conversation about Joe Girardi and the managerial decisions that he has made, not just yesterday in pulling Ranger Suarez, but the entirety of the season. 610-632-0975. Tom Albert producing the show. I'm Tyler Zulli. We take you until 4 right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Welcome back to the show. 610-632-0975, the number to join the conversation. I am Tyler Zulli. Across the glass from me, producing and co-hosting, Tom Alvord. We take you until 4. This weekend's programming is brought to you by Heineken. Enjoy your Labor Day weekend with a crisp and refreshing ice-cold can of Heineken. Pick up a pack or get it delivered. You do have to be 21 to purchase. Please drink responsibly. So we got on this conversation a while ago about this this ejection thing, and I want to get back to it in just a second. I get a text from my dad, who was my basketball coach the year that this happened, and more often than not was the basketball coach, period. But he texted me and said, the fact that you didn't get ejected after performing a clothesline on a guy coming down the lane was amazing. The only thing that made it better was one of my teammates yelling at the referee saying that it wasn't a foul. He and I, not me and my dad, me and my teammate that year were kind of lightning rods for officials. And again, remember how I said to you, I never thought I committed a foul. Like I was that guy on the court, never committed a foul. Between he and I was a never committed to foul guy. He was a get at the referee about everything guy. He played like 100, you know, the kind of guy that played 100 miles an hour and was just all over the floor. And together, we were probably a problem for referees and probably a problem for our coaching staff, who, by the way, were my dad and his dad. So it was it was a good pairing.
Family business.
Yeah, it was a good pairing to have for sure. But yes, yeah, so there was one game specifically, a guy split our guards or something, was coming down the lane, and I didn't get over in time, so I guess I stuck my arm out and just clotheslined him, and probably should have been teed up or ejected or whatever it was, but got a common foul, and he comes running in. So I was playing like four. He was our point guard. He comes running in from the top of the key and starts arguing with the referee that it wasn't a foul. And looking back, it's so clear that it was.
It's obviously a foul.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I literally clothesline a kid to the ground. But it was funny at the time that, you know, young me and young Eric, is his name, my teammate, were so adamant. I don't know what you're talking about. What do you? No foul. Come on. It wasn't a foul. Yes, it was.
That's a true friend right there. That's what that is.
Good teammate, right?
Yeah.
Good teammate, good friend.
True teammate.
For sure. 610-632-0975, the number to join the conversation. All right, we do have to get to this Eagles conversation. And Alex and Eric, we will get to both of you. Eric in Hatfield, by the way, is not my teammate, I don't think. I'm pretty sure he's somewhere else. But we will get to him about his ejection story, and we'll get to Alex as well in just a second. Did say that we were going to talk about the Eagles and take a more holistic approach to the NFL. So what I want to do for the rest of the show, for the remaining 90 minutes or so, when you call, I will give you a little bit of a superlative, right? So I want to know from you, not only your Eagles record prediction, because I do want to put you on the record and get your thoughts, but I also want to get who you believe is going to be the Super Bowl winner, who you think could be the MVP of the league, and I want a team that you think could be a sleeper team and a team you think is going to be a disappointment. So I will start. Tom will get yours in just a moment, and then it can be you. 610-632-0975, and we will kind of break down division by division in just a second. But right away, I am going to give you my four. The MVP of the NFL this season, based on usage and based on how much they're going to be required to be good for their team to be good, I believe is going to be Josh Allen. I think he's going to have a combination of rushing yards and passing yards, and the Buffalo Bills are going to be a good team again. They're going to contend for a not only a playoff spot, a divisional title probably, and also be a contender for the Super Bowl in the AFC with some other teams. Of course, Kansas City and Baltimore, Cleveland, Tennessee. But I think Josh Allen ends up being the MVP of the NFL. With that being said, I don't believe the Buffalo Bills are going to go to the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl. I will go out on a little bit of a limb. This is where people are going to go, really? And I'm going to go, yes. I think that this team is very much alive in the Super Bowl contention, and I know the AFC has some really top-heavy teams. Kansas City's, of course, going to be the favorite to come out of the AFC. I'm going to go to the AFC North, and I think another team is going to come off the list of teams that have never won a Super Bowl. I think the Cleveland Browns win the Super Bowl this year. I know that it's a little bit...
Warning, this is a hot take alert.
Yeah, I know. I think it's a hot take alert. I think that offense was really, really good. They figured out how to utilize both Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt in the rushing game. They don't ask Baker Mayfield to do too much. They just ask him to be good and a competent quarterback. That defense is really solid. Got better with the addition of Jadeveon Clowney this year. I know that they are no longer one of the hunters when it comes to teams that are vying for a playoff spot, but they're actually a hunted at this point because I believe them to be a good team. But after their week one appearance in Kansas City, which they could probably, I mean, theoretically, they might lose that game. It's going to be a good game. After their week one appearance in Kansas City, they've got a home game against Houston, a home game against the Bears, which I believe will still be starting Andy Dalton at that time. They go to Minnesota. They go to L.A. to play the Chargers where there's no fans. That's two good teams, but I think they could conceivably win both. Then they have a three-game home stretch. That gets you to halfway through the season. they could be 6-2 or 5-3 at that point and be really, really comfortable heading into the back end of their schedule. It's a difficult back end of the schedule. They actually, for whatever reason, go Baltimore by Baltimore, and then they have Green Bay and Pittsburgh on the road closer to the end of the season. It's a tough schedule, but if they can front load their schedule with wins on the easier part of their 17-game schedule, they can win this division, perhaps be the number two seed or the number three seed, and find their way to Kansas City for the AFC Championship game and find a little bit of revenge against the Kansas City Chiefs from a season ago. I think that the Cleveland Browns are going to put themselves in a really good position to be a good team this year. I know that it's a long shot, but I'm going to take a little bit of a hot take there and say that the Cleveland Browns win the Super Bowl. Team that is going to be a sleeper team this year, and I guess sleeper by definition is a team that was perhaps out of it a season ago that could be right back into the mix, or could be a team that might do some stuff that we didn't expect them to. It doesn't have to be a team that, you know, Jacksonville won a game last year, one game. It doesn't have to be that crazy. But a team that I think could be a bit of a sleeper this season, and by the way, you have to take the San Francisco 49ers out of the equation, because the 49ers are projected by everybody to get back to the playoffs. They're not a sleeper. They're a good football team. You've got to take them out of the equation. But a team that I think could be a sleeper this year, finished 7-9 a season ago. They were hindered by inconsistent play a season ago, but I think even with the fact that they're losing one of their tight ends for the season with a meniscus tear, it's a third-place schedule for this team. They're going to get their starting running back healthy. Their defense is still good. I shouldn't say still good. I think is better than it was a season ago when they gave up 475 points a season ago. I think a sleeper team this year could be the Minnesota Vikings. Like I said, a third-place schedule, two road games to start the year, but it's Cincinnati to begin the year. They get Detroit twice, obviously. Their schedule is not overly difficult, and I think that they could be a team that makes a jump back into the playoffs from a season ago at 7-9. And then finally, a team that I expect to disappoint in the 2021 season, did not make the playoffs last year, they did not make the playoffs last year, but I think are actually going to take a step in the wrong direction, because I don't know how they actually feel about their starting quarterback. They drafted him with the 5th overall pick, and they continue to swirl in speculation about a potential trade for Deshaun Watson and, you know, maybe moving on after this season. I think the Miami Dolphins are going to disappoint a lot of people this year. They won 10 games last year. That means they've got a second-place schedule. They, of course, have a difficult schedule in the AFC East. I believe New England to take a step forward again this year with Mac Jones as their starter. The Buffalo Bills, of course, are a solid team. They have to go to Tampa Bay. They have to go to Tennessee. They have to go to New Orleans. They've got the Colts. They've got the Baltimore Ravens at home. I think the Miami Dolphins take a big step back. They're going to be a big disappointment this year. I think they might win somewhere in the 7-8 win category for the season. So that's what I've got. My MVP of the league will be Josh Allen. Super Bowl team, maybe a little bit of a hot take. I'm taking the Cleveland Browns. A sleeper team, the Minnesota Vikings, who finished 7-9 a season ago. A team that I think is going to fall a little bit this season, from a season ago, the 10-6 Miami Dolphins. So when you give us a call, I'm going to ask you those four, and you explain it to me, 610-632-0975. I want to get Tom's in just a second.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.